I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Domestic violence isn't something most of us are comfortable talking about, yet according to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, one in four women will be the victim of domestic violence in her lifetime. And the consequences can span generations and have huge economic and health impacts. Joining us to talk about domestic violence and some of the resources available to help victims is Kristen Perugnog, who's the founder and executive director of Break the Silence Against Domestic Violence. She's on the phone from San Diego, California. Good morning, Kristen.
Good morning.
And Gabby Rowland, who is in studio with us. She's a board member of Break the Silence. Good morning, Gabby.
Hi.
And Carmen Espinoza, domestic violence advocate at the Falmouth Police Department. Good morning, Carmen.
Good morning.
All right, so domestic violence isn't just about physical abuse. The U.S. Department of Justice defines domestic violence as a pattern of abusive behavior in any relationships that's used by one partner to gain or maintain power or control over another intimate partner. So let's start by talking a bit about the different types of abuse that fall under domestic violence. Kristen, do you want to start?
Sure. Well, when dealing with domestic violence, people often think that it's strictly physical abuse, and that's definitely not the case. Many of the people that I work with, we can definitely agree that emotional abuse and mental abuse could probably even be worse than physical abuse at times. There's also financial abuse, and there's also, I mean, it may sound interesting to some people, but religious abuse and legal abuse, it's really abuse in one particular aspect of someone's life that, you know, you're now being abused towards.
Mm-hmm. Carmen, anything you want to add to that? I mean, a lot of times, I mean, it could be using, you know, keeping your children, using children as pawns, verbal abuse. There's a lot of things that could come in this category.
Yeah, it's every situation's unique, but it's about controlling another person. Mm-hmm. So whatever power one person has over another. And like you said, it can be anything.
And we're talking women here, but this can happen to men too. It isn't just women. Sure. who can be abused. Gabby, you're a survivor of domestic violence, and unusual in that you've chosen to make your story public to educate others against violence against women. So before we talk about your work with Break the Silence, before the abuse started in your case, were there some warning signs in hindsight now that you maybe didn't recognize?
Yes, definitely. He had a lengthy criminal history that I chose to look past. And as Kristen said, there was the emotional and verbal abuse before the physical. It took a period of time for the physical to start, but there was the others before that.
Yeah. The question that people who haven't been in abusive relationships always ask is, why do you stay? Why do they stay? Ultimately, Gabby, you did leave, but why did you stay?
I stayed because I loved him. I honestly believe that everything he did to me was the first thing or the last thing that he would do. I didn't think that he was capable of worse, but he showed me that he was.
Mm. Carmen, that's common, right? I mean, when you talk to survivors of domestic abuse,
the reasons why they stay,
yeah.
The one you hear the most is, I love him, but there's also, we have children in common together, we live together, finances. There's a lot of reasons, personal reasons. You just got to determine what you can and can't do. Mm-hmm. If you're with somebody who controls all the money, then you have to educate yourself on how to manage money without him finding out, or how to do things without him finding out. So when you get out there, you can do it on your own.
Right. Kristen, your organization, Break the Silence Against Domestic Violence, is based in California, but you have a very active online presence and hear from women across the country. Are there some commonalities to the stories you hear from women about their abuse and why it's so difficult to leave their abusers?
Oh, absolutely. And that's why Gabby has affinity with Break the Silence, because, you know, the different stories that we share on our Facebook page, we use it as an avenue for people to break their silence, many for the first time. And so when young ladies like Gabby or myself come to a page like this and they see, you know, stories of women or men who are sharing their stories, and they find little things within the story that, oh, my God, that's my story. And, oh, my goodness, this story is just like mine. And are you sure this isn't my story? And so these people are coming to the page thinking, oh, my gosh, I'm not alone. Mm-hmm. Before maybe coming to our page, they thought that they were alone, that they were embarrassed to break their silence. And now, you know, now that they're here, they're like, oh, my gosh, I have comfort in knowing that there's other people that have been through the same struggle as I have. And so they're not alone. And now they know that, okay, I can, you know, talk about what I've been through, because people understand.
Gabby, it must have taken a lot of strength to leave. Can you tell us when you finally realized this is what you should do and how you facilitated leaving to ensure your safety?
I left my abuser on July 5th of 2013. I was at work and I had his car, and I told my boss. She was the first person I talked to. And I remember her asking me, "Is it that bad?" And I looked at her and I started crying and I said, "It's that bad. And I can't make it through another weekend." He wanted to move to New Bedford and take me away from my family and my friends, my job, everything, totally isolate me. So between my boss and the owner of the business that I work at, they had decided that I should bring the car to the police station as a neutral territory, because I didn't feel like if I were to go to him, he would bring me to where I needed to go, whether it be a friend's house or a family member. So I went to the police station and I tried to get into a women's shelter. Unfortunately, there weren't any beds available, so I decided to stay with a friend, and then eventually went home and proceeded to go through the legal route and press charges.
Very scary experience, I can only imagine. I
mean, yes.
My heart's pounding just thinking about that. So once you left the relationship, you said you had two choices. You could start your own downward spiral, or you could reach out to help others. And Break the Silence started you down that path. Describe how you found the resource and how you used it.
I literally just typed in domestic violence in the search bar on Facebook. A bunch of groups came up, and Break the Silence really stuck out to me. I noticed multiple posts during the day, lots of survivors, and I just related to a lot of the women and their stories, like Kristen said, and I just... it kind of took off from there.
Yeah. It's tough. I mean, as you're saying, you're feeling really isolated. You're out of friends. You don't know what he's going to do. You went down this legal path. Very, very, very tough to go through all of that. Did you find, when you were reading the stories that the other people were posting on the website, did you find strength in that? Did you feel like, even though they may be in different parts of the country, they were with you in this?
Absolutely. Definitely. Yeah. Even just in this tour that Kristen is going on with 10 other women, I feel like I know them. I've never met them before. I've never met Kristen before, but I feel like they're there for me. I mean, I shared my victim impact statement with all of them and got positive feedback. So I felt a difference. I testified against him in October for a probation surrender hearing, and I testified against him for a jury trial that he was sentenced to. And I felt so much more support all around me in March in comparison to October. Of course, I had support in October from family and friends and just the community. But knowing that I had people from all over the country thinking of me and knowing what I was going through.
Yeah, some strength there. Carmen, is that unusual? I mean, getting somebody to testify in a courtroom, that's tough.
It's very tough. I think being from a small town, it's even tougher because we're all interconnected, whether we're shopping at Stop and Shop or going to the doctors. And it takes a lot of courage, and a lot of women don't make it that far. I do believe, though, that whenever somebody actually makes it into a police department and makes a report, that's a big step, and they need to be supported even if they can't follow through. Mm-hmm. Gabby is an exceptional example of courage and bravery.
Yeah.
And I believe a lot of women who live in this town are going to get strength from that and help their cause.
Yeah. Kristen, do you want to chime in?
Can you repeat the question?
No, we were just talking about women who, a lot of women don't make it that far to testify against their abusers. Yeah.
And one of those women is me. I didn't speak up when, you know, each of the incidents happened and police were called several times by neighbors or friends. And I wasn't ready to, you know, press charges against him. So when my very last incident that happened, October 2011, I was ready to speak out. I was ready to press charges. And unfortunately, the justice system wasn't on my side. They said that I waited too long. And with a variety of other things, I wasn't able to press charges on my abuser for almost killing me. So that's very common for the people that I've seen, that, you know, they're not ready to press charges, or they recant their story, or they don't want to go the legal route because they're scared that their abuser is going to, you know, lash out even more, or they think that it's not that bad. I mean, there's a variety of different reasons why people don't choose to testify or they can't testify. So I definitely commend Gabby for standing up. She's not only standing up for herself, but she's standing up for the thousands of women that we help every day.
Yeah. Kristen, tell us more about why you created Break the Silence and what's your mission, what you're hoping to accomplish.
Sure. Break the Silence started December 3rd, 2011, following me getting a restraining order against my ex-boyfriend. I shared my story publicly on Facebook after learning what domestic violence was and learning that thousands and millions of people around the world suffered just like I did. So with that being said, other people around the world started sharing their stories with us and then asking for advice and asking for services in Wichita, Kansas, or the UK, or New York City, or all the way down to San Diego. And I found that there was a growing trend of people that didn't know what services they had available to them. And a lot of people didn't know that they were in an abusive relationship. So with that being said, we became a nonprofit in 2012. And that was our first year that we were able to provide programs for victims and survivors of domestic violence, child abuse, and sexual assault. What we want to accomplish is to end domestic violence. We're on a tour right now that we're going to 10 cities across the country, educating people about domestic violence, educating people about our organization. We run very different from other organizations. We're very, not in a negative way, but we're very in your face about domestic violence. We make it cool to talk about domestic violence, especially to our younger generation. And we market ourselves a lot. Yeah. So a lot of people know about us, and I just want people to know that domestic violence is real. The warning signs, what it takes to have a healthy relationship, and basically build advocates from, young boys and girls all the way up to, older people.
Yeah. Kristen, you mentioned this 10-city tour. Falmouth is one of those places you're visiting. How did Falmouth get on the list?
Well, back in November, we had a call to proposals for our supporters. We said, hey, I want people to submit a impact statement on how Break the Silence has impacted you. We had about 25 submissions from people all over the country, and Gabby was one of them. The object was to pick 10 of these cities, and those 10 cities are going to be the ones that have the most likes on their Facebook, on the Facebook photo. And Gabby received one of the top 10 votes. So with that being said, Gabby will be getting a visit from me in 2 weeks, and she'll be getting interviewed for a documentary that we're filming for Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah. Gabby, you're helping to organize 2 events in Falmouth that will be coming up on April 12th and April 17th. Tell us about the events.
April 12th, we are doing a Speak Out Against Domestic Violence, and we have various different organizations that are from around the Cape and Massachusetts that will be kind of networking between each other, letting each other know what they're doing, letting the community members know what their organization is doing, what projects and events they have coming up, what services they provide, and any of their experiences with domestic violence. And we're hoping to get some politicians in there. I believe Miss County Plymouth and Miss Massachusetts. Is that right, Kristen?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They will also be there, too, sharing their experiences. We're going to have a silent auction from local businesses around town that have donated. So just basically spreading awareness about the topic.
And then on the 17th, you're at Friendly's?
Yes.
And that's a fundraiser for Break the Silence, right?
Yes. Yeah. Friendly's is going to donate 20% back to Break the Silence.
Yeah. Kristen, anything you want to add before we let you go?
For people that are listening, I want everyone to know that if you are a victim of domestic violence or if you know someone that is in an abusive relationship, definitely send them our way. Funny thing is that we've had people contact us, like friends and personal friends and family of mine, and they would tell me that, I know someone that's in an abusive relationship. What do I do? I mean, there's a variety of things that you could do, but at the end of the day, if the person doesn't want to leave, it's going to be very hard to make them leave. But we've had a great success with showing people our Facebook page and showing them our videos. And we've had several people leave their abusive relationships based on our Facebook page. Mm. So if you know someone that's in an abusive relationship, please send them our way and check out our Facebook or our website. And we're more than happy to help.
All right. Kristen Paragunog. Did I say that right?
Perugnag.
Perugnag. Thank you. Kristen Perugnag, founder and executive director of Break the Silence Against Domestic Violence, joining us from San Diego. Thanks, Kristen, for being with us.
Thank you.
We're talking about domestic violence, and we'll have more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about domestic violence. With us is Gabby Rowland, board member of Break the Silence, Carmen Espinoza, domestic violence advocate at the Falmouth Police Department, and also joining us now, Lisetta Herge Putnam, executive director of Independence House in Hyannis. Tell us about the work of Independence House, Lisetta.
Well, this is a wonderful follow-up listening to your program earlier, because our work really is the same as the organization you just spoke with. So we work with victims of domestic violence and sexual violence right here on Cape Cod, working with victims and survivors from all 15 towns on Cape Cod. Mm-hmm. And our work isn't as Facebook-oriented. We actually do some work on Facebook, trying to reach out to survivors as well. But much of our work takes place, of course, in the office or in different locations across Cape mm-hmm. Cod.
Yeah. Don't you have an anniversary coming up this year?
We are in our 35th year.
35th year, yeah.
On Cape Cod, yes. So mm-hmm. We're hoping to really spend some time celebrating all of the lives that we have touched on Cape Cod for the last 35 years. Yeah.
And as you were listening, Gabby's become she's going public about her experience. Mm-hmm. And this takes a lot of strength, as we know. But you've said that this can be an important part of healing, that it helps victims move on to become survivors.
Yes. And I think I'm sure Gabby is more expert on that because she's had the experience. But for the work that I've been doing with survivors for, too long to say, but a long time, yes, that's seems to be very empowering for survivors to be able to share with others. And that's sort of a very traditional, old way of doing the work, but it seems to work. I believe it was the executive director before that said that survivors feel that they're not alone, that's my story, and that is so true. And just, you know, often survivors will say, you know, this happened to me and I thought I was the only one. And they survivors do feel alone. They're in a tunnel, you know, almost. And then to hear other people say, yes, that happened to me as well, and I can't believe it. So, and it's very validating is the word I guess I would use.
Yeah. Gabby, is that how you feel?
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm.
So it's empowering for you to share your story and try to help others.
Yeah, I feel like it's necessary. I mean, I don't feel like I should have to hide just because this happened to me.
So we said earlier in the program, domestic abuse is not just physical abuse. It's also emotional abuse, and it's just as serious. Can you describe some of the ways abusers emotionally hurt their victims?
Oh, is that for me?
Yes, for you.
Well, I think there are, so many ways. I think often what we hear the most, or what I hear often from survivors, it's around parenting oftentimes. I'll take your children away. They'll never see you again. Or they might even, somebody who is an abuser might even say to the child, you know, your mom is, she doesn't love me, or she mm-hmm. doesn't want to do what I tell her. And that's emotionally devastating for someone who is a mom, you mm-hmm. know, as moms, you know, love their children and care about them. And often, sometimes for survivors, that's the last straw. It is getting the children involved. But there are many other ways. An emotional abuser might say, well, if you leave me, I'm going to kill myself. Mm-hmm. And if you do, you know, what are you going to do then? You know, because I won't be around anymore. So I think that's probably one of the most powerful ones. And I often will find that really impacts survivors, because no one wants to feel like they're responsible for killing someone. And for a survivor, you know, to really provide support to help them to understand that they really have no control over that. And survivors do understand that, but sometimes it's still very difficult.
Right. Kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, Carmen. It's about control, whether it's verbal or physical. It's control is what is the bottom line here, right?
Right. And I think partners know each other's weaknesses, so they'll play into that. It's often the children and the power that they have, either because they have the finances, excuse me, and self-esteem and self-respect. Some guys will know things about someone's past and threaten to tell everyone or spread rumors that aren't true. I deal with a very young crowd, early 20s, and a lot of that Facebook and social networking stuff where they can spread the word really quick. And it can be devastating to a young girl who doesn't have a lot of self-confidence to start with, to be having things spread around her that 9 out of 10 times are not even true.
Right.
And that's a hard thing to live with.
Yeah. And as we mentioned, domestic violence primarily impacts women, but gay men, teenage girls also at risk. Data shows that teens that are in an abusive relationship have a greater chance of being in an abusive relationship as an adult. And Carmen, there are high school students who have restraining orders because they're already displaying abusive behavior in their relationships. That's hard, I think, hard for a lot of people to believe, but it's true.
It's true.
And every high school on the Cape.
I don't know about every high school. I just know about Falmouth. But I would think it's a pretty across-the-board type thing. We have a school resource officer at the high school and one at the middle school for that reason. Incidents have happened on property between boyfriend and girlfriends with, you know, dangerous items. Yeah. And it's very scary for the teachers included. I mean, they're involved.
Yeah. 15 to 40% of youth report perpetrating some form of violence towards a dating partner.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. Yeah. So when you have teenagers in high school with restraining orders, I would imagine that makes it difficult for the school administrators to keep, I mean, especially if you have more than one, that must be a challenge.
Well, if they have a restraining order during school times, I believe the lines of the boundaries of that restraining order are a little different because they have to go to class. And all the teachers and the administration know what's going on, so they're keeping an eye on the two people. But it's for their home. It's for when they're going to the movies. Mm-hmm. It's for when they're out with their parents, just like an adult.
Yeah, there are usually specific parameters around a restraining order, whether it be for adults or kids. And as Carmen said, it is critical that the school is sort of on board and understands and respects those parameters for the safety of the victim. So, yes.
So you deal with teenagers as well then?
We actually do. And if I might say, the CDC issued a report that even for tweens, what they call tweens 11 to 14, there is already evidence of teen dating violence. So that's the youngest among us. So one of the pieces of work that we're doing at Independence House is what is primary prevention work. And we actually have staff, our Independence House staff in the schools in Barnstable High School, not in Falmouth yet, but we hope to, and also in Yarmouth. And what we're doing is what we call the Mentors in Violence Prevention Program, where we are actually helping teens to create an environment around healthy relationships and understanding what that's all about. So we are also wanting to prevent that cycle from continuing in our world, really.
Right. When children are involved in abusive households, the impacts, of course, are far-reaching. Data shows that 50% of men who batter their wives or partners also abuse their children. And male children who witness the abuse of mothers by fathers are more likely to become men who batter in adulthood. Mm-hmm. So I imagine you encounter children as you help women deal with domestic violence. Talk a little bit more about the impacts on the children.
Absolutely. We have a child witness to violence program at Independence House because we recognize exactly what you just described. And what we see often we find that children, of course, their education is affected, meaning their social and educational relationships. So they have trouble concentrating in school. Sometimes, you know, a child might be diagnosed with ADHD or ADDD, and it doesn't mean that those diagnoses aren't there for some students, but for some it is because, imagine if you can, you're a child of seven years old, and the night before you go to school the next morning, you're at home, you're at the dinner table, and mom and dad are having a fight. And I don't mean a disagreement, but a physical altercation or horrible names are being called, and you go running to your room and you're hiding underneath your bed because you're so scared because you've seen this before. And then you have to get up at, yeah, I don't know, 6 the next morning and you go to school. Can you imagine? You're 7 years old. What do you think is going to happen to that child in the classroom? They're not going to be their best. Their grades are not going to be good. Some kids even have, just adjustment problems in the classroom, but also socially, because are you going to be on the playground telling your friend about what happened at home last night. So that's the best way I can tell you. And what we see is kids who are very scared, they're angry, they're acting out, or they're withdrawn, or they may suffer from depression, even bedwetting. Mm-hmm. And those are just some of the more, you know, common things that we see with kids. And we really try to help them to understand how to be safe and to have safe adults that they can turn to, and to help them to understand that what's happening is not about them and it's not their fault. That's just some of the work we do.
And of course, sometimes when you have a child in the household like that, then they think violence is okay.
Yes, or they get confused, yes, and right. Violence does become a way of solving problems for some of those kids.
Yeah. All right, so there's this sort of common misperception that victims of domestic violence fit a certain profile, mm-hmm. but that's not reality. Reality is this happens across the board, anybody. It doesn't matter what your educational class, your economic. It happens across the board.
One of the first people I met, I was in my 20s, and it was someone I worked with. She was a college educated woman, very well, quote unquote, put together, whatever that means for people. but I think she would be described that way. And I worked with her on a daily basis. I was actually working in a domestic violence shelter, and she was my friend. She was someone whose home I'd gone to. I'd babysit for her kids. And I had no idea that she was a victim of domestic violence until she couldn't come to work one day. And then she told me what had happened. And if you saw her, you would not believe that she was a victim of domestic violence, at least back then when there was more stereotype about what a domestic violence victim is. So anyone at any time, no matter what your race, religion, ethnic background, socioeconomic background, where you live, where you work, whom you love, you can be a victim of domestic violence. Yeah.
We are discussing domestic violence with Lisetta Herge Putnam, Executive Director of Independence House in Hyannis, Carmen Espinoza, domestic violence advocate at the Falmouth Police Department, and Gabby Rowland, board member at Break the Silence Against Domestic Violence. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are discussing domestic violence with Lisetta Herge Putnam, Executive Director of Independence House in Hyannis, Carmen Espinoza, domestic violence advocate at the Falmouth Police Department, and Gabby Rowland, board member of Break the Silence Against Domestic Violence. Carmen, I imagine you see more people coming to you and reporting this than, like we were saying, back in the day, you just kept quiet, and like your neighbors wouldn't say anything. That's not our business. But as we're, you know, learning more and more about this, more and more people are reporting it and coming forward, right?
Right. Back in the day, there was no laws. Mm-hmm. So officers were limited to what they could do, maybe take the guy for a ride to calm him down, but they ultimately had to let him go because there was no charge. Once those laws changed, and I can't give you the year, but they've been around, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years, where it is a crime to hit another person. They gave the officers some power to take charge for the moment. The bottom line is he can still get out on a bond and go back home, but that paper trail has started. And in the legal side, paper trail is real important. Mm-hmm. And so that's changed, and now we have a lot more power, and the officers have a lot more power to get them out. Really, really severe cases, even without a victim, they can go pretty far before they have to drop it if a victim's still not willing. In that time, it's advocates' input that helps victims maybe change their mind a week or two down the road mm-hmm. when, you know, that in between arrest and actual court. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of good changes have made it safer for victims to report. And now that we are developing more programs in police departments, people are reporting because an officer who hears, I've been hit, and it was by John Doe, has to go arrest John Doe or charge him because that's the law. I'm not an officer. I'm an Independence House employee bound by confidentiality. So unless a victim's in danger of hurting themselves or their child is in danger or there's an elderly or disabled, I'm not legally bound to report the crime. In time, I can maybe talk her into going that route, but it's all ultimately her decision. Mm-hmm. And so both having people in the department that are not sworn officers and having laws that back up these charges have made it easier. And I think people feel better coming in.
And I think, Gabby, what you're doing, telling your story and, you know, following it through and going to court and testifying, also I would think impacts other women saying, maybe I can do this too.
I hope so.
Yeah, that's why you're doing it. Yeah.
And if I can add something, I feel it's important to say that the choice for each person, woman or man, is very individual.
Sure.
Some people really just want the abuse to stop, and they may not necessarily want to press charges or prosecute. And it's really, at least the way that we work with survivors, it's really helping them to understand what a whole range of options are and to respect their choice as far as what they decide is best for them.
Yeah. Lisette, maybe you can tell me about, you know, somebody who's maybe been married 20 years and has been fine. There are cases where you've been with someone for whatever, a long, long time, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, this starts happening. Maybe not out of the blue, but maybe it was suppressive. I mean, maybe it was a little bit of verbal, and then it escalated. But it can happen.
Where I've seen that or heard of that would be more in a situation where maybe someone went into combat. Mm-hmm. They went to war, and then after they've come back, their behavior has changed dramatically and significantly from the way they used to be before they went to war. But in my experience and in the literature, domestic violence is really a pattern of abuse. Mm-hmm. And it's unlikely that you're going to be married for 20 years. And after 20 years, it happens the first time. That is not what we would describe as domestic violence. It's a situation of violence that's mm-hmm. occurred. But in terms of, you know, what we work with, in my experience, that's different.
Gotcha.
Or if someone has a mental illness, or they've been diagnosed with a mental illness, their behavior might change.
An injury.
Yeah. Brain injury, or, you know, something of that sort. But typically, that's not what we've seen, where it's out of the blue.
I was thinking of some of the senior citizen couples who, you know, mm-hmm. and maybe they've just hidden it so well for all these years, but there seems to be some instances where there's been some violence where maybe there hadn't been in the past as they get older.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that. So we were talking about children a few minutes ago, and the you know, there's resources for kids. So if obviously you've got your program that you're doing, but maybe Carmen, you know this. If you have, I mean, what do kids do? Do they tell school? I'm a teacher. What are the resources for kids that are in these situations?
Children are in a very difficult position because mm-hmm. speaking out brings attention to the home, and they may feel responsible for the breakup. And you really... It's really not a child's job to speak out, but a lot of them do. And they'll reach out to a counselor or a friend, and the friend will tell their mom. But ultimately, the victim has to be the one to follow through. And that child may not want to speak out because mom's not following through. Mm. Children are resilient. They can adjust and adapt to anything. So what you were saying earlier about an incident at night or and then going to school the next day, you got kids that watch mom get beat up the night before, get up, go to school, make breakfast, wash the dog. Mm-hmm. Those kids are going to learn how to do that too, because we all learn what our parents do. So they may grow up looking great, but what did they live with and what have they adjusted to? So when she's 15, 16, 17, dating a boy that's pushing her around, she may be able to do that same thing. Mm. And that's what I'm always looking at, you know, what are you learning? How are you learning to cope? And how is that going to transfer into your adulthood? Because someone's going to hit you and you're going to get up, go to work. And, and that's what I think the outreach that Independence House does is so important, to plant the seed in their head. They may not get out of their home with any change. It may stay that way. But in their head, they know you don't have to do this. And somebody they trust and look up to has told them that outside of the home.
I think with kids, it's really important for teachers to be educated and recognize and understand that some behaviors that they might be seeing in the classroom could be connected to domestic violence or something at home, which I think they do anyway, as far as maybe other issues. If a child isn't learning or isn't paying attention, it may not be about domestic violence, mm-hmm. but it could be. So I think they have to be alert to that and perhaps try to get some more information, whether it be with the guidance at school, and try to somehow reach out to the child. Because as Carmen said, they're kids and they really are relying on adults in some ways to be... to look out for them.
Yeah. So as we're mentioning, domestic violence, of course, has been around for decades. We are seeing an increase in reporting over the past few decades, and attributed probably a lot of it to the fact that people are becoming more educated about abuse and that there's more supports in place for battered women. The police and justice systems have also changed how they handle domestic violence cases. Carmen, as you were just mentioning a couple minutes ago, can either of you talk about some of the changes, what the impacts have come from those changes?
Well, I mean, I can start out just by saying, you know, the fact that Independence House is a community-based organization and not a shelter is significant. Shelters are still incredibly important, but one major change is that, you know, survivors can now walk into any of the courts in Barnstable and file for a restraining order and then go back to their homes if they decide mm-hmm. that that's what they want to do. And if the judge grants the order, of course, because it's up to the judge. But in my time, years ago, it was almost impossible to even obtain a restraining order. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's restraining order doesn't work for everyone and it's not applicable in every situation. But I think that's one big change that I've seen over the mm-hmm. years, that it's just a lot more accessibility to the justice system, yeah. or to the civil yeah. system, I should say.
Yeah. And I think 2-3 years ago when they came out with a criminal harassment order, mm-hmm. it's not for domestic violence intimate partners, but it's for, say, an ex-boyfriend who's coming around and threatening the new husband or mm-hmm. his kids or getting harassed by his kids. And it's not intimate partner anymore, but they were at one point, and that's why he still thinks he has the power and control. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole lot of that, and I think that's why the state, I don't know if it's a national thing, but I think that's why the state had to come around and mm-hmm. find another way to protect people from the same power and control issue mm-hmm. from an abuser.
Now, I would imagine on the islands too, it's, you know, we're talking small community here in Falmouth, but you know, if you're talking domestic violence in the Vineyard or Nantucket, that's a tough situation because you really are, I mean, running into each other.
Absolutely. And I hear that from my colleagues on Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket all the time. And they have to work pretty hard yeah. to try to keep survivors safe and help them to find options.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's, of course, a hesitancy to talk about domestic violence from some people. But if you suspect someone you know is being abused, what should you do?
What would you say as a survivor?
Get help. Talk to someone. There are people that are willing to help you. It doesn't feel like it when you are in it, but everyone wants to help you.
What about somebody that, like a friend of yours who might have seen what was going on with you? What would you have wanted them to do? Would you wanted them to talk to you to try to, I mean, what would you give for advice for people who have a friend or a family member who they suspect is being abused?
Of course I'd want them to talk to me. Mm-hmm. I lived through it. I survived it. And I'm still going, so I'm always open to talk to people, whether I know them or I don't know them. And that's why I'm doing everything I'm doing. So someone can reach out to me, someone can talk to me and feel comfortable doing it. That I'm not, yes, I may be a stranger, but I know what it's like.
Mm-hmm. I think because there's so much silence around the issue, it is critical that if a family member or a friend or clergy person or neighbor suspects something, that they do reach out to that survivor and say, hey, you know, I notice whatever, I really mm-hmm. care about you, and I'd like to help in any way I can. And just know I'm here for you if you want to talk about anything. And if they see injuries, I think they should express their concern and not become a part of that silence, mm-hmm. but to really just pull the curtain out and say, I think I know what's going on, mm-hmm. and I'd like to you know, help and support you if I can yeah. in some way.
Yeah. What about, you know, I'm thinking, you were talking teenagers here before, you've got a teenage daughter who you see has got a boyfriend who's pushing her around, and obviously as a parent, you're going to be pretty concerned about that, but sure. your teenage daughter may not be telling you all this. Carmen, you're laughing because this is happening, I'm sure.
Well, she ain't a teenager yet.
I have a teenage daughter.
But, yeah. She's got one.
So what do you do?
You pay attention. You stay open to communication. You don't judge them. You don't blame them. Sometimes, and I, you know, remember growing up, it was more of an attack on me because my boyfriend's not good. And mm-hmm. it's like, you got to somehow get around that and approach them as somebody who's in a difficult situation. And let go of the whole parenting, my daughter deserves better mentality, because you can go real ugly mm-hmm. real quick. Mm-hmm. Because the fact is, that boy's also someone's son, and he's still a teenager, and there's something going on, you know. So compassion, I think, helps her, will help the child not feel like you're blaming her or blaming him. but knowing that there's limits too to what she can do to help, because I think a lot of girls, we're nurturers, we want to fix things, we want to help. So that can be a hindrance if it is helping somebody that's hurting her. Mm. And I think it's just, you got to really be careful how you approach the child.
I'm going to encourage, maybe this is ducking the question, but I would encourage, since, you know, domestic violence happens in gay and straight relationships, I would encourage moms, dads, parents to talk to their sons and daughters about what a healthy relationship is. Mm-hmm. And to, I would absolutely encourage any mom or, you know, dad whose child, teenage child, is in an abusive relationship, underage child, to take action immediately and not tolerate it at all. Mm-hmm. It's not okay. And I think that that message needs to be sent to your teenage child as well.
It's, and there are situations where it can be dangerous to leave. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if the abuser can sense when a woman is getting ready to take action. So how do you advise women who are ready to leave to do it safely?
Well, if I tell you that on air, then
there won't be at our door. But for women
giving away secrets. But what I would encourage a survivor to do is to just be aware of the resources, such as, you know, hotlines like the Break the Silence, the National Domestic Violence Hotline, in the Independence House Hotline. And if you have access to the web, whether you go to a library, if you don't have it at home, I think you can contact those organizations. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, I'm sure you have a large listening audience. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to give away any secrets about what we encourage survivors to do. Right. But there are some specific steps that we want to make sure that a survivor takes, that if they're going to leave, they have all the documents that they might need when they leave, that they do have a plan, and they have a safe place to do.
Yeah. Okay. We'll leave it at that. But let me, there's something called the High Risk Task Force.
Yes.
Yeah, tell us about that. What is that?
Well, the High Risk Task Force was is a collaboration between the District Attorney's Office, Independence House, and other individuals or, you know, entities, I guess I'd say probation, places, you know, people like that, civil and domestic violence advocates. And in a nutshell, it's really to be able to identify survivors who are at the highest risk of homicide, and to be able to help to keep that survivor safe in her community by examining what available options there are to do that, whether it be through, you know, victim services, the legal system, or other sources.
And there are resources available for abusers too.
Yes. Batterers intervention programs, which are the sort of recommended method for someone that is, you know, described as a perpetrator. It's, mm-hmm. it's a group situation to address their behavior of violence, not anger management, right. Not recommended.
Okay. Any closing thoughts?
Just thank Gabby for stepping up and giving our town something that I think a lot of victims are going to look to when they're making a decision on whether to walk in our police department or not.
And I would encourage anyone that's listening and are on the Cape and want to get services on the Cape, whether it be Falmouth or other parts of the Cape, to call our hotline or go to our website. And our hotline number is 1-800-439-6507, independencehouse.org.
All right. We'll put a link up on our website. Lisetta Herge Putnam, Executive Director of Independence House in Hyannis, and Gabby Rowland, Board Member of Break the Silence, Carmen Espinoza, Domestic Violence Advocate at the Falmouth Police Department. Thank you all. And Gabby, thank you so much for stepping forward and sharing your story.
You're welcome.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Amy Vins produces The Point, with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.